Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, it's Leave It In the Ring.
Welcome back to another edition of Leaving Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gable Montoya. Boy, do we have a lot of stuff to talk about. Two major things that are in the news right now for the boxing world to really start putting their hands together and going, ooh, this is going to get good. First off is the whole Golden Boy Civil War. Schaefer and De La Hoya, their body language at the fight this past weekend with the Thurman and Diaz fight. You know, also, I don't know if you guys caught this, but Steve Kim from Max Boxing tweeted out there about Kathy Duva filing a complaint against Al Haymon. And that, to me, is the big news there. That, to me, is something that's really, really going to stir the pot for a lot of folks in the boxing industry, especially for the men in boxing, because it's the sad part here is that you have a woman that's going to come in and say, you know what? And just imagine this. She's coming in with a little boombox with the song going, we're not going to take it, right? And she's going to do something that a lot of the men in the business are afraid to do, which is step up and start pointing fingers and saying, yo, this is wrong. The monopoly of what you guys are doing and trying to keep us out on the outside, the smaller promoters, of getting any type of television slots, any exposure, or keeping our fighters away from you, from any of your guys' fighter ever fighting. And the only way that's going to happen is if they jump ship and, you know, sail down to your island, is the only way they're going to get a payday, and a decent payday is that. So Kathy Duva stepping it up and saying, I'm filing the complaint, and I'm going to start opening these closed doors so that the rest of the world can see exactly what these other guys are manipulating. And Gabe, I think you received the file complaint, right? You were able to read that, or how did that play out for you?
Yeah, oh yeah, I curled up with that yesterday, just like a good book. I wanted to make myself like a hot chocolate and just kind of chill and read the tale of the alleged plot to take over Golden Boy and away from Oscar De La Hoya. Basically what we've been saying all along, create a league of their own and kind of sign all the talent and monopolize, corporatize the sport. I think it even goes further to even get, like people think that HBO was the only cable company that was going to get burned here, but kind of looks more like everybody's going to be eventually, like Showtime as well. It's just kind of what we've been talking about all along is what the suit alleges. I mean, there is the initial issues about the Stevenson and Kovalev fight, no doubt. You know, that's the main issue here. But then everything that, in order to put it into context, the complaint paints the rest of the picture of Al Haymon within the sport of boxing, how he's alleged to have been operating for years and to what end. And it's a very clear picture of trying to monopolize the sport, sign away all the talent, kind of pull the strings from behind the scenes while being, that ambiguous advisor role, which is neither promoter nor manager, but yet somehow both. It's very interesting reading. This is the thing that it's kind of a thinking, with my writer brain, it's always, you want to come up with some line to put it all in perspective and to show how brave Kathy Duva is. And I think it's insulting to say that, she's, the only boxing promoter with a set of balls in the sport. I think that's insulting to her because I don't think being brave is necessarily, and doing what's right is necessarily a male attribute. Being a man doesn't make you instantly courageous. Because I know a lot of moral cowards in this sport that happen to be male. So I think what Kathy Duva is just a brave human being, a brave woman, in a man's world, this sport has always been male-dominated. But but really she's showing who the adult is and who the real person is, of character, you know. That's what she's showing.
She's showing what, this is what you do when you have to fight for what you've built. And when somebody tries to come in your house and trying to destroy everything that you and your family have built up together, this is her showing, I'm not gonna lay down. I'm gonna fight back. I'm gonna do what any living person would do, is, you know, to survive, is to fight back. And that's exactly what she's doing.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, enough is enough. It's kind of like how many times are you going to have the border moved, you know? How many times are you going to have somebody walk over and take a dump in your lawn and then kind of just say it's okay? I mean, and, you know, when people, it's not just against Heyman. It's against Golden Boy and also Showtime. And it talks about Espinoza in not so, so you know, nice terms. It's all kind of the things I've intimated on the show that you've talked about, this monopoly and this kind of all under one umbrella mentality, and just the you know, the fact that you have a lead counsel of Golden Boy running Showtime Boxing. How can you not, you know? And the idea that they're, you know, I've had other industry people come forward to me and say, you know, this idea that, oh, we'll work with any promoter, that just doesn't seem to be the case, is what this one person was saying to me. And others have said it, you know, in the past when my other article came out just a couple of weeks ago when I interviewed Kathy and talked to her about this very issue, the monopolization and corporatization of the sport. It's a tricky thing to keep the sport fractured and have all the different promoters, you know, kind of vying for the top spot and vying for the TV spots. But at the same time, that's kind of good for the sport because everybody should be putting their best foot forward. When you get these deals that are exclusive, you know, we've seen this in the past with Golden Boy over at HBO. I mean, it wasn't always garbage, but they had the leverage to just do whatever they wanted. And so sometimes you just got garbage and you got favor fights. That's the danger of monopolizing in the sport.
Right.
And also the fighters don't seem to have any control. That's probably the best reading of this. I'm just kind of going over it because I'm not a contract lawyer, but there's an Al Heyman contract in there. An advisory contract, and it's, you know, you wonder where, you know, is it a template, is it the standard? But it's very interesting reading. And I think this opens up all kinds of things. Federal investigation.
Don't forget,
if she wins the case, is imminent.
Don't forget to send me that so I can read it too. I got
to
read it.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to. I'll run to the bathroom. It's sitting next to the toilet, and I will grab it. It makes for a good read.
Next to just issues Playboy magazine.
Yeah, it's like I move everything out, you know, light some candles. I really set the moment, you know, because this is what it's all about right here. This is the moment.
Right.
Very interesting.
Really interesting stuff. Hey, today we're going to have a roundtable for the moment, the Mayweather versus Madonna fight. Not a lot of buzz about it, I got to tell you that. But, you know, we decided that we're going to let other folks come on and make their predictions. So we have a pretty good lineup here. First up is going to be Mike Rodriguez, who's the cut man, and is also one of the guys from War Tape. He's going to be coming on. You guys heard him. He's come on and talked about the safety for fighters. He'll be on about 11:15. About 11:30, we're going to have strength and conditioning coach for Abner Mars, Luis Garcia. He's going to come through and give us his prediction and who he thinks is going to win that fight. And then a little later, we're going to have a trainer here in my town right now, where I live at, Tony Avila, who is the owner of Bad to the Bone Boxing Gym in Modesto, California. And then a little later, we're going to have the welterweight champion, Sean Porter, with his father, trainer Ken Porter, with us here on Leaving the Ring about 12:30. Noontime, we're going to give up our predictions, and we're going to talk about this past weekend fights, especially about the big buzz, what happened between Molina and Matisse. That was a big fight there. We knew that something was going to be special out of that fight. And you know what? My prediction almost came true, Gabriel. Molina almost pulled it off. He almost had it in the bag for him. But Matisse is just a tough nut to crack.
He sure doesn't get tired, does he?
No, he doesn't.
He just keeps throwing punches the whole fight. You know, those knockdowns were kind of flash, but he did seem a little. The first one, he seemed like he'd gotten hurt by Molina by a right hand. that landed right before it, and like Molina got like full extension, just bang. And then a few seconds later, kind of hit him with it, another one that caught him nice, you know, on the temple, but it was like it just kind of finished the job of the first one. You know, I got to give it to Matisse, though. I mean, he gets back up, gets himself into the fight. Second knockdown happens, and Steve was there live, and he said, you know, you could kind of – you almost got the feeling that he didn't want to be there anymore, that he was having that conversation with himself, you know. And then he roared back. And Molina, you know, I wonder about that bleeding on his head. How much blood did he lose? I mean, he just seemed to go all of a sudden, you know. And I know Matisse, that left hook to the body, right into the solar plexus. It was really nice. It wasn't like down in like a liver shot. He just kept shooting it right to the center of John. And it just kind of deflated him. Much quicker, it seemed, than just like your standard to the ribs, you know, side of the ribs body work. But I don't know, but did you feel that John all of a sudden just hit a wall and just started rolling downhill? Like, he got tired fast, whereas Matisse never got tired.
You know, the thing with John is this. Here's the thing. My biggest complaint for any fighter is to jump camp from camp from camp, because you're never able to settle down and find out who you really are and what you bring into the ring. To me, I saw a lot of John trying to guess what he should do next. And it shows, because he's been from, you know, the Garcia, he's been from Goosen. He has like a love and hate relationship with Goosen, that when
Mario
it comes
Morales.
Down, yeah, you know, when it comes down that he needs to own up to whatever style that fits him comfortably, he can't do it because he's not really sure what he owns. And that's what I saw with Matisse. When he hurt Matisse the very first time, he almost tried to go into a different style of trying to take out Matisse. He didn't just decide to go after him. He decided to try to box him and find another opening for him to land. And I think that's what messed him up. You know, I think that there's just far too much thinking for him in the ring. It doesn't seem like he's comfortable, but I got to give it to Lucas Matisse. His solar plex shots were something else to watch. I mean, they were in awe. Anytime you hit somebody at the solar plex, we saw that happen to Danny Garcia with Mauricio Herrera. You hit that solar plex, you hit right in the midsection or any section part of the stomach, and it's going to stop you in your tracks, and it's just going to tire you out. It's going to flatten the wheels, and you're going to get slower and slower. Now, granted, Molina is not the fastest guy in the world, but the guy throws some atomic bombs. And when they land. You could hear the boom out of them.
Sweet
but
Jesus.
He couldn't throw
yeah.
it anymore. He couldn't throw those missiles anymore because he was just too worried what was coming back to him, to the body. And he was really fighting himself of who he was going to be that night. But I got to tell you this, man.
Go ahead.
There's a lot of people that have down on John Molina Jr. They've all said, he's not that great, blah, 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 blah. Except, and they've kind of written him off before he even got wrote off. I think this really proves, if anything, the Gladiator nickname fits him. Not so much for Lucas Matisse, because he didn't look like a machine. He actually looked like a human being fighting for his career. Didn't look too much of a machine, in my opinion. But John Molina looked
like
a gladiator.
That doesn't get tired. He looked a little bit like a machine in that sense. But you're right. I mean, you saw some decisions being made by Matisse. You know, that conversation, if you've ever had a fight in your life, is one that is pretty intense, you know, fight or flight. Do I stick around here? How much do I got? Can I dig in my heels and get to this guy? I mean, I'm winning the round, and then he hits me, and I fall down, you know, all that stuff. You could see Matisse, you know, go. But with John, I think you're dead on the money, and it's not so much that he's confused by what to be. It's that he hasn't had enough fights in order for anything to truly crystallize. So nothing is nature to him. This is probably the most relaxed I've ever seen John, and probably the best boxing stance I've ever seen him have. You know, that one foot is pointing towards the opponent, and the back foot is a little bit too. He's just staying in that kind of side stance that is, you know, kind of like fencing, the way you should be. The first time he was trying to be a small target, but he's just not relaxed enough to be smooth and have a bounce about him, to kind of bend his knees and get into a rhythm. You know, I've never seen John dance, but I wouldn't peg him to be much of a hoofer. And so he doesn't have like a rhythm that he gets into. He throws that bomb and he hopes that it lands, and then he hopes to kind of get a rhythm by punching rather than having the whole package move in unison, if that makes sense. So there's no, like, jab that's always kind of sticking and moving. You could see Matisse find his rhythm after that fifth, sixth round just by letting his hard jab go down to the body, come upstairs, start to mix it up, and that just activated something in him, as opposed to Molina, who was always trying to get that big shot. And then after a while, you could just see it because he gets a little bit tired, and you can start to see what he's doing, and it was over, you know. It was experience, I think, was the big key. And just simply rounds, the ability to relax and know who you are. Hell of a fight, though. Not fight of the year, though.
Yeah, I didn't think it was fight of the year. I mean, look, it's fight of the year if we don't get anything else that's worth saying fight of the year, to tell you the truth. I mean, it's the only fight that's really kind of held up to its name. But I'm not going to be so quick to say this was fight of the year. We still got what, several more months to go before we can even claim that. But it's definitely in line in that category for fight of the year. But it wasn't for me yet, not just yet.
No, I liked Krolla versus John Murray, man. I don't know if you've seen Anthony Krolla versus John Murray. I'll have to send you a radio broadcast of it. But boy, it is. It's just more sustained action, and there's ebb and flow, and who's in control. It just changes throughout the fight. Molina never really seemed in control, even though he knocked Matisse down. If that makes sense, you know, it was always kind of like,
oh no, that
he's
makes
right
perfect
there, and
sense.
He's always dangerous. But yeah, I mean, whereas Murray versus Krolla, dude, you gotta, it's just, wow. Like,
he didn't,
I don't
know
if they need to do it again, but wow.
Right, Molina didn't seem to know how to keep Matisse off of him. He was able to drop him, but it was really because Matisse was coming in with aggression and he was there to be hit. But as soon as he started making some adjustments, Molina didn't know how to adjust to those adjustments. Hey, let me patch in our first guest with us. A good friend of Leading the Ring radio show is Mike Rodriguez, the cut man for the War Tape. What's up, Mike? How you doing, brother? You're on live right now.
Good, guys. How you guys doing, man? Happy Thursday.
Hey, happy
Thursday
to you,
man.
Too. You're doing good. Hey, so really quick, let's get you on in here. Been seeing a lot of you on the TV screen here, buddy. Hey, congratulations, man.
Thanks. You know what? It's when I got a big head like I got, you know, I probably got a face for radio, but I'll take anything I can get.
Right. I always point it out, and everybody goes, yes, David, yes, we know, you know him. I'm like, yo, that's my boy Mike. That's Mike right there. Like, yes, Dave, we know. I'm getting on everybody's nerves now, Mike. So a little bit less, don't be so obvious anymore when you're on the TV screen there, buddy.
Yeah, it's kind of hard. You know, I'm 6'4", and some of the guys I work with are 5'7", 5'8", so I kind of stick out like a sore thumb sometimes.
Right? All right, Mike,
let's
get you on.
Yeah, start selling big banners across your chest, you know, because you've got some space right above their head, you know, when the fight.
Exactly, and that's why I try to take advantage of our new custom designed War Tape shirt.
There you go.
Not to get in a shameless plug, but I just had to do it.
Right.
I threw that ball towards the basket. I know what I'm doing here.
Right. All right, let's get on Mike.
You lobbed it right up there, and I hit it right off the tee.
Yeah, it's out the park right now. So we got this big fight coming up. I'm not really sure if there's a major buzz about it, but, you know, of course, it's May Day. That's what's been labeled now by Floyd Mayweather taking over the slot for Cinco de Mayo in Las Vegas at the MGM against Marcos Chino Madonna. Really quick, Mike, what is your prediction? What do you think both men got to do in order to secure a victory?
Well, you know what? I do think there's a buzz from real fight fans, because the one thing that that Chino Maidana has done is he's shown that he can hit, you know, guys that have some speed. Amir Khan, obviously he wasn't as successful with Devin Alexander, but with Adrian Broner. I just think Mayweather's skill set is so far superior, but that's not just against Maidana. That's pretty much against anybody. And you know, everybody may be waiting for Mayweather that one day where he kind of gets old in the ring, but if he's himself in such great shape, both mentally and physically, it's going to be hard. But with that said, guys, Maidana has proven that he can turn fights around with one shot, and he's the kind of a guy that if he can hurt you a little bit early, he's proven that he can kind of change the course of that fight. He wasn't able to do that with Alexander, but he certainly was able to do that with Victor Ortiz and with Victor Ortiz and Adrian Broner.
You know, that's a good point, man. He's always been successful with speed. It doesn't seem to really bother him as much. You know, the thing, though, the thing that I've noticed is that punching power was really at 140. At 147, I've kind of seen him struggle with Soto Carras, even with Josecito Lopez, even with Broner. It seemed like he needed to land more than one or two shots. And that's my question. Can Madonna land one or two shots on Floyd? And if he's successful in landing a big shot, I think the big question, because every guy that's landed a big shot on Floyd, is how do you do it again? Because we all know that Floyd is by far one of the smartest guys in the ring, where once you catch him once, he's not going to let you do it again. He adjusts to it, and he takes that punch away from you. I'm just curious.
I think you just answered. You gave the answer that I was going to give, is that when you do hit him like that, Mayweather makes sure that it doesn't happen again. And you've seen that time and time again, you know, in all of his fights. And that's really the million-dollar question. The one thing that I will give Mike Donna is usually when he does hurt a guy, in every fight that I've ever seen that he's hurt somebody, he's always been able to hurt him repeatedly. So that's going to be the interesting thing. But I think the key for Mike Donna to have any chance of success to stay in his fight is he has to hurt Mayweather earlier. And Mayweather has shown that he very rarely, if ever, gets hurt early.
You know, I said the key for Madonna to win this fight. I was saying that the key for Madonna to win this fight was to have Manny Pacquiao mom flown over there and have her in the audience doing her voodoo.
I saw that on the pay per view, and I was like, man, that looked kind of around the same time that Tim Bradley calf kind of went out on him, and I don't know.
Right.
I don't like to say I believe in it or not believe in it, because the one time I say that I don't, you know, somebody's going to put some kind of hex on me or whatever. I don't want that to happen.
Well, I got to tell you this. I didn't believe in it either, Mike, but when I see Mexicans that are 6'4 and 6'5, I got to believe that everything else is possible. You know what I'm saying? Because that wasn't possible back in the day.
I always say that nothing's impossible, you know?
Right.
You know, here's the thing, though, with Broner and Ortiz, that Mayweather doesn't exhibit is aggression and the willingness to trade. Both those guys, you know, Ortiz walked straight into a right hand because he put Maidana down and was stupid about how he was going to finish.
I agree with that. You know, Floyd stays off the track, so to speak. He stays offline, even though it may appear that you can hit him. His reflexes and his positioning is so good that, you know, he's there 1 minute and he's not, and then he's going to counter you. And people don't realize Floyd Mayweather can punch. He chooses not to put himself, for the most part, in that line of fire where he can be hit back. But I think given the opportunities, you know, he can buzz the tower. He can hurt you.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the key will be, can Maidana bully him straight back to the ropes, and what he does when he gets there and in the corner, or does he get tied up, you know, and just they get walked back to center ring and it all begins again. That's going to be the key. Like, that first clinch is always very key, you know, who moves who back. And
I think a lot of it has to do, too, with the ref and how much the ref's going to let you work. Mm-hmm. You know, you guys watch a lot of fights. Some refs, as soon as the guys tie up, even though they have a free hand, the ref will break them. And then there's some referees, you know, if you got a free hand, you can punch. As long as you're not hitting the guy behind the head or hitting him, you know, in the kidneys, as long as you got that free hand, you know, you can punch.
Tony Weeks is the ref for this fight, and I'm not sure how I feel about that. Just sometimes he lets him go. Sometimes he kind of gets in there. I always tend to think he's a good, clean ref. You know, he's not. I don't consider him biased or anything, but it will be curious who fouls and first with that elbow or the forearm like Floyd does. Maidana has that move too, and he's not afraid to use it. That's going to be an interesting piece of geography, is the fouls and the ropes. I think both those things.
Yeah, and I think if there is some fouling, it definitely will be tit for tat, because Chino Maidana is a very, very physical fighter, and he doesn't mind the waters really getting choppy. And Floyd's proving the same thing. You know, he's, you know, forget that million-dollar smile. I mean, if it has to get rough in there, Floyd's proven that he can get rough as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially on the break.
So what's your pick here, Mike? What do you think is going to take this and why?
I think Floyd's going to outpoint him. I think it would go the distance. For the fan in me, the intriguing part is if Maidana can hurt him and make it a great fight, because in the end, you know, first of all, I think we're all fans as well. You want a great fight. But the fight on that card that really intrigues me is going to be Amir Khan or Luis Collazo. To me, that's the wild card fight on that card. I'm really looking forward to that fight.
Yeah, and same thing here.
I think
for both of us here. Yeah. Let me ask you, what's your prediction on that fight between Amir Khan and Luis Collazo?
I think that skill set-wise, Amir Khan has every tool in the world to beat him. I think Collazo has a lot of confidence right now, and I'm going to pick Collazo by stoppage. I mean, it's just if you pin me against the wall and say, who am I going to pick, I think Collazo has a lot of confidence right now, and I don't know if Khan really hasn't been that active, and I think Collazo is going to beat him. But then again, Amir Khan may be on his A game, and he may go in there and just outbox him and outpoint him. But I think Collazo is going to catch up to him at some point in the middle of the fight.
He's in
good
shape. That's the thing about Khan. He's in very, very good shape. I think it's something that people are really discounting. I had a chance to see him twice in person. You've seen him as well. He's been doing nothing but getting in shape to move to 47 for a year.
Right.
Will the rust be a factor? And can Collazo get to him? You know, because
yeah,
I think Collazo's a good boxer too, but he's not. I think to beat Khan, you got to rough him up and you got to go right at him or be able to hurt him. And
yeah, but I mean, just 2 years ago, I mean, Collazo lost to Freddie Hernandez, and you saw what Julian Williams,
yeah,
you know, at 54 just did with Freddie Hernandez. So I mean, you know, Collazo,
right.
I mean, people got to they take the Victor Ortiz fight, but you also do have to take consideration he lost. And there's no shame in losing to Freddie Hernandez. Don't get me wrong, but I don't
right.
think Freddie's on the same level, you know, as an Amir Khan. Is or Victor Ortiz.
I'm not even
yeah.
sure if Victor Ortiz is on the level of Khan right now, you know, the Victor Ortiz that we saw. Who knows what that was?
Yeah, and Victor's one of those same kind of guys. You never know what you're going to get. He could look like a million bucks and give you that hope if you're a fan of his that he's going to pull through and look great. And then he's also shown that he sometimes he hasn't shown up for whatever reason. But then again, you got to give the opponent credit because they're not – you know, Victor's not just in there falling down. You know, the other guy has to do what he's supposed to do, and Collazo did that in his last fight with Victor.
He did, and he was good doing it. You know, he looked sharp up to that point. It wasn't out of nowhere. I mean, it kind of was, but he was proving to be a range problem for Victor.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, there you go. Mike Wartape here, Mike Rodriguez here with us on Leaving the Ring. Mike, you working this weekend or no, day off?
No, I'm actually taking it off. I worked the ESPN fights last Thursday from Agua Caliente with light heavyweight contender Thomas Williams and a couple of other guys on the undercard. I'm kind of just going to be a fan this week. I was in D.C. you know, 2 weeks ago with Showtime Sean Porter, and obviously everybody saw how impressive he was with Pauly Malignaggi, and I got a couple of other guys that are getting reloaded. Julian Williams, I'll be in Montreal in the Adonis Stevenson undercard on the 24th, and then the night before, I'm also real excited to work with Peter Petroff in the ESPN Boxino Finals, who'll be in upstate New York. So I got some good things coming up, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, there you go, brother. Well, thanks again, man, for coming on Leaving the Ring. Can't wait to talk to you soon again. You have a good week.
Absolutely,
you have a good weekend,
guys. You guys, yeah, keep up the great work, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right. Mike Rodriguez from Wartape, who's
nice
also a cut man. Came on. I mean, he just came on and gave his prediction about Floyd Mayweather as well as a Luis Collazo fight. So you guys make sure you tune back a little later. If you missed Mike Rodriguez with us here on the ring, we're going to be calling in Luis Garcia. Hey, let me ask you something really quick here, Gabriel. I'm over here trying to be multitask, so if I sound like I'm all over the place, I apologize. But let me ask you this. Floyd Mayweather
like
on his last press...
or something.
I know. Floyd Mayweather made a statement on his last press conference saying that that he's going to give the fans what they want, meaning that he's going to stand there and he's going to trade. Now, we've heard this from him before. You remember when he was going to fight Robert the Ghost Guerrero, he said he was going to do that. He was going to stand there and he was going to trade. But this time he threw out there, he said that there is no game plan to fight Maidana, that he didn't even bother to come up with a game plan, and that's because if he wanted to give some suspense, I guess you can kind of put in that phrase, some suspense in this fight for the fight fans. Now, is it really because he didn't make a game plan because he's been fighting pretty much everybody that kind of is similar to Madonna's style, or is there some truth to what he's saying?
For my next trick, I will set myself on fire while blindfolded. You know, like it's just, that's all this is. It's just, let me up the ante, you know. I'm going to fight a guy with my one hand tied behind my back, you know. Please don't look at the fact that he's lost to guys before and, you know, been knocked down and, you know, by Amir Khan, the guy I didn't want to fight for this fight. Pay no attention to that. Just, I have no game plan for this fight. You know, the game plan was made when he picked him. He probably watched some tape. Yeah, I could take advantage of that, and that. I mean, people always, you know, I always have to remind people that Floyd's a gambler, which means he loves to hedge his bets, which he likes information. I mean, East Rothstein, you know, we watch Casino. What it's about is knowing everything you can about your opponent, the art of war. You know, if people think Floyd is flighty about this, you know, I mean, undefeated at this point is not an accident. So the idea that he doesn't have a game plan for Maidana is just him being a promoter. I find it interesting this week that there's so many storylines. There's so many different things. I mean, today, you know, somebody, apparently it was Floyd, on his Facebook or whatever, you know, posted the thing about his ex having, you know, an abortion. And that's why he dumped her. That was the message put up there. Some people were claiming that maybe it was somebody else that quote unquote hacked his, you know, his Facebook account or put his business out there, but he didn't or whatever. But all this week, you know, from him wanting to buy the Clippers, I bet you won't hear anything about that ever again. Maybe a couple of times people will ask, you know, Ellie Setback or something will mention it. Hey, are you still buying the Clippers? You know, and to say hello to, you know, my fans in Cleveland. This is all just everybody just kind of sitting at the buffet of media, you know, takeout and just like, gorging themselves on BS. The fact of the matter is that the real storyline is that this fight is a prepackaged win. It's an 11-1 fight. It's costing you $70 at a base. I think probably 80 if you have to get HD, if they're really into having float in your living room, on your TV. It's not that good of a fight. It's not even that good of a card. They're not bad fights, but they belong on regular cable, not on the co-main, not for $70. We're watching a guy that was fighting on like Fox, now is fighting on the co-main. You know, I mean, and you said you pointed all that out as it was happening. But I find it weird that they keep throwing out all these different storylines, and the real stories are the Golden Boy's falling apart. There's a lawsuit out against Schaefer, Heyman, Showtime, Golden Boy. And if that goes through, if they win that case, we could see, you know, federal action against all those people involved.
We're going to see some really big time stuff. Hey, let me patch in our next guest with us, who's the strength and conditioning coach, Luis Garcia. He's a good friend of the show. He's been on numerous times. So, Luis, are you there, brother?
Yeah, I'm here, man.
Hey, thanks for coming on. Really quick, just give us a rundown. How's everything going with yourself, and what's new?
Everything's well, man. I'm just, you know, right now we just started camp up again with Abner Mares. We're gearing up for a fight date of June 21st. Obviously, we don't have an opponent name, but I know there's a couple names that are being thrown out there. But right now, just, you know, we've been keeping Abner in shape, and right now, you know, just getting back into full on camp. We have 7-8 weeks left for June 21st, so right now is when we start the nitty-gritty of camp.
That's great, brother. Hey, so go ahead, Gabriel. You going to say something?
No.
Go ahead.
Okay. So we got this big fight coming up with Floyd Mayweather versus Maidana. Obviously, a lot of folks are leaning towards Floyd winning this fight. What's your pick? And let me ask you, if Maidana does have a chance, what does he need to do and secure to get that victory?
He needs to rough Mayweather up. I mean, the only way you could do it is, you know, by roughing him up continuously throughout the fight. You know, whether you're hitting shoulders or you're hitting elbows, whatever it is you're hitting, you got to keep touching him up. Can he do that consistently for 12 rounds and maybe, you know, beat him in, you know, late in the fight like maybe Cotto did? I personally don't think so. I don't think he's got the size. I don't think he's got the jab to push him back like that. And, you know, and I think, you know, Mayweather's just a more focused fighter even than when he fought Cotto. So it's going to be really hard for him to do that.
I agree.
I think that's the big key is that little jab, you know, the jab to the chest. The ability, you know, Cotto, his positioning and the game plan that they had was so specific. The combinations that they threw in order to get in there behind that jab, you know, or like once they got in there behind the jab, the way he would throw to the shoulder, then the chest, and kind of work his way up. Maidana, though, he does seem to be a little more intelligent than I think people give him credit for, and have a strong will. But, I mean, for you, you know, what would you do with a Maidana if you were, you know, what would be your advice to him? How would you approach this?
Just kind of, you know, put your pedal to the metal and just go balls out and, you know, see if something happens. I don't think he's got the power that Cotto had. I mean, and really one of the key things that Cotto did, and people don't give him enough credit for during that fight, is throw that jab. And really that's what was able to, you know, actually close that gap and, you know, keep, and he was consistent with that jab and obviously putting him back in the ropes and being able to work off that. I mean, other than that, if you're Maidana, try to do exactly what you did to Broner and just punches and bunches and, you know, coming from all different angles, you know, and that's, I mean, I guess that's his only chance personally. I don't see any other way that you can beat him.
He has to insist all night long. Like Cotto did. Cotto insisted. He was like, "Lo, I'm going to get my jab in there. You know, no, we're going to fight in the corner. This is how I want to do this." And you have to, it's the good ones insist and they get you to go along. Floyd's really good at getting people to not do anything. I think that's the key, is Maidana has to really let it go, like you said. Just let it go and just why, if you fight 12 rounds with Floyd,
Floyd's good at doing that because, I mean, especially because of his foot movement. I mean, he gives you a lot of different angles with his feet.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't just pull straight back. I think Cotto got him to pull straight back, you know, because he did wear him down with a little bit of power in that jab and got him to pull straight back and end up in the ropes. As of late, you know, Mayweather, you know, maybe because his father's back on the team, maybe he talked him into, you know, having a little bit more lateral movement, one step back and then next step to the side instead of just moving straight back and pulling back like he was for a while. So, I mean, with that kind of movement, I don't see Maidana being able to do anything. I mean, Broner was in front of him. Broner's the kind of guy that does most of his best work inside and you know, Floyd is not that guy. You know, Floyd's a guy that's going to give you a lot of lateral motion, and so I don't foresee him, you know, just going back into the ropes and sitting there whatsoever. So I don't give Maidana any chance. But at the end of the day, I think it's going to end by stoppage.
Oh, if you're going by stoppage, Mayweather over Maidana.
Yeah, that's what I got personally.
Okay, let me ask you, Carlos Molina, does he have a chance? I kind of tend to believe he does. Carlos Molina has a chance against Adrian Broner. What do you think?
You know, I think Adrian, you know, learned a whole lot, you know, during his last fight. I mean, I think he does have some heart. I think he's a little bit more focused. He does seem to be a little bit more focused for this fight, you know, getting back in there and, you know, kind of, you know, earning his respect in boxing. I know Carlos, and I think he's a wonderful talent. You know, I love Carlos to death, and you know, I've always thought that he was, you know, I think he's the most talented of his three brothers. But nevertheless, he's the kind of fighter that, you know, even against Amir Khan, he froze on a big stage. I mean, he was ready. He was 100% ready. He was looking great in sparring. He goes out there on that big stage and he just froze. He froze on us. And so I just think, you know, once again, he's gonna find himself a year and a half removed, you know, from the ring, and then stepping into an even bigger stage, you know, in Vegas, you know, on a major fight night. You know, with the guy that's, you know, potentially probably, you know, has a harder punch than, you know, even Amir Khan. And if he waits on him and he doesn't attack him and he's not consistent, I mean, he's going to sit back and the same doesn't happen that he did to Vicente Escobedo, you know, and I don't really see the fight going any different than that. I mean, with all respect to Carlos, man, I love the guy. I wish him the best, but I don't see the fight going any different than that.
God, you know what? That's a good point, dude. I didn't even think about that, but that's why we brought guys onto the show today to throw out their valid points. Amir Khan versus Luis Collazo, who do you got?
I have Amir Khan. You know, it's kind of even in speaking to Virgil Hunter, you know, Amir Khan seems to really, really be focused on this fight. And you know, he said they were able to work on a lot of different things, you know, they had it passed. And he was a little bit more specific with me on those things. I can't give too much credit to Collazo for beating Victor Ortiz, although he did catch him with that big punch. But then he was there to be hit, and you know, And Ortiz is, you know, consistently throughout his career has been there to be hit, kind of with the big shot. And, you know, obviously Ortiz broke down mentally and didn't want to get back up at that point. But I don't see Collazo at this point in his career being able to really, really put something on and, you know, something together and, you know, pulling off the big upset against Amir Khan. I really don't think so.
Got you. Well, there you go. Luis Garcia here with us on Leaving the Ring Radio, Strength Conditioning Coach, one of the best out there. Luis, hey, thanks for coming on and talking to us. And where are you going to be at for the fight?
I'll actually be in Vegas. I'll be there tomorrow morning for the weigh-in. You can be flying down there with Abner. We have a couple of interviews to do out there, a couple of business things for Abner to take care of. And then after that, we'll be back in camp Monday morning.
All right, brother. Well, wish you all best of luck, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, fantastic. Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Luis Garcia here on Leaving the Ring Radio with us, giving his prediction and who he thinks is going to win. I forgot to ask Mike Rodriguez what he thought about the Molina and Broner fight, but and he threw some good points out there about Molina, you know, being stage fright, you know, freezing up with Amir Khan. This is a much bigger stage. I was really kind of sold on Molina doing the upset and tell you the truth here, Gabe. I don't think you were, but I know I was definitely. But now I'm getting a change of heart.
And I will continue talking to you on mute if I like it. No, that fight, you know, I mean, it was – you're talking about Molina Matisse, right?
No, I'm talking about Carlos Molina and Broner, that coming up.
Oh, that fight, you know, that's an interesting fight. And I think there's – Carlos, I agree with everything that Luis said. I can't speak to him freezing on the big stage because I'm not in a locker room. I'm not in Carlos's head. You know, sometimes the other guy's just faster and you just never come up with a decision. And maybe, the fight just passes you by. My hope is that doesn't happen. To Carlos, and that he learned from his big moment, you know. I think the big key is just not let Adrian get any sort of confidence. And no matter if he's clowning, you're hitting him, you know. Just you got to take advantage of every opportunity to get at his confidence and to get him back to trying to show everybody that he's okay. If you got him doing that, you're winning, you know. And that's where Carlos has to be. He is a very good boxer. You could see he's got intelligence. He understands the game. He understands what he needs to do. It's a matter of getting it done. And so I'm excited for him in this fight. The opportunity is there. If he feels worthy about taking it, you know, and really just says, like, I can have this, and goes and gets it, it's very possible for him. But he's going to have to, you know, that, and he's got, his face has got to hold together. He does cut. That's the problem, you know. And Broner loves to use elbows and loves to be rough inside. It's going to be on the inside. And I think Carlos has got a nice left hook on the inside, man. Like a mid-range, that left hook, he will put it all the way through you because his technique is nice. So it has potential to be a good fight because, you know, has Broner learned? We don't know. Is he, you know, now the mature Adrian Broner, or is he the entitled rich kid that they created at HBO and brought over to Showtime that blew up in their faces? You know, nobody really gives – people dog HBO, but that was part of the deal of letting Al Heyman go and all that. They were – the last thing was a possible multi-fight deal for Adrian Broner, and HBO passed, and then he lost. So, you know, maybe HBO does know a little bit of something about how to run their network.
Yeah, maybe. You know, here's the thing with the Broner and Molina thing is that I know we're all looking at what Molina is lacking and what he can't do, but I think that we have to remind ourselves what happened to Broner with Madonna. Broner too he's psyching himself up. In my opinion, he's psyching himself up that was a fluke. He's psyching himself up that, you know, he's supposed to be this next great thing, but. Look at his body, man. He's gotten just way bigger. Does he look like a real 140-pound guy? I don't know. All that muscle, to me, shows that he's going to be slower. He's going to be tight. He's not going to have movement. He's not going to be as agile as he was before. And that all spells for a guy that has to stay in the pocket and do the exact same thing he did against Madonna. There's not going to be an adjustment, in my opinion. And that's where it leaves down to Molina, where Molina's going to have to dig in deep, and he's going to have to go in there and show some angles and some hand speed and some combinations. The combinations is what's going to be the key, because Broner is a 1-2 type of fighter. He likes to throw one or two punches. Occasionally, he'll mix in a three and a four, but really, he likes a very slow, mild pace. And Molina can interrupt that. He can really make this fight a lot more difficult for Broner. If you kind of watch with Madonna had Broner thinking all the time, trying to figure out what he could do to sustain the pace that was comfortable for him. And when Madonna wasn't giving that leeway to Broner, you saw Broner start making a lot of mistakes. We saw Broner kind of panicking in there. We saw him getting caught. We saw him getting caught with shots that normally he shouldn't have been getting caught with. The shoulder roll was definitely not working for him. And that, to me, could really happen again with Molina. But Luis brought in a really good point. You know, condition-wise, he was ready for Amir Khan. But when the big stage and those bright lights hit, he froze up. Can that happen again? It's a year from when that happened to now, this Saturday night. It's a much bigger stage, and there's a lot more on the line. Molina, to me, is going to have to be fighting for his career, not just to win a fight against Broner, but to really fight to keep himself irrelevant at the 140. I don't know. I just kind of seem to think this is a much more of a toss-up fight than what we're really seeing on paper. Again, everybody had labeled Broner the next Floyd Mayweather without him really doing any Floyd Mayweather stuff. So this is a real fight for, to my opinion, this is a much more of a real fight for Broner than all given. Just because what Broner has, you know, like I said, the mystique of him being the next Floyd Mayweather, it just doesn't cut it for me. I actually like how Broner's moving along, taking up some pretty tough fights. I mean, the Madonna fight was actually a tough fight for him to take on so early in his career. He could have avoided it, but he didn't. At 147. Now going back to 140, that could be a major problem here at 140 because he's dropping those 7 pounds. And realistically, he was coming in at 154 or whatever he was when he got in with Madonna. So he's not just shedding 7 pounds. He's shedding about 15, 20 pounds now just to make to 140. So that's where it leads to me is how well is he going to be rehydrated, how well his legs are going to be and his upper body movement. Are we going to see more than one or two punches being thrown? Are we going to see combinations? Are we going to see a stiff jab? Are we going to see a refresh Broner that at one time should have stayed at 140, which he never even decided to stop, you know? Now he's thinking, well, I'm going to be there, and because everybody else is leaving, and it's easier pickings for me to be at 140 than it would be at 147. Test the water was too choppy, and it pushed him back closer to the shore, which is 140. But we've seen this time and time. Tell me if I'm wrong, Gabriel. We've seen this where a guy skips a weight, jumps up, builds muscle, now tries to lose that muscle, tries to go back down to a smaller weight, and guess what? It just doesn't pan out for them. But this time, but here's the thing, though, is Broner doesn't look like he shed any muscle. He looks like he actually has gained muscle, man. I don't know what you're thinking, but he looks bigger, not smaller.
Yeah, it's you know, he's looking at his body. I don't know. We'll see what he weighs and how shredded and ashy or not he looks. You know, guys get really, really that ashen, you know, and I'm not talking black or white here. It's just that look under the eyes, you know, when they get kind of like sunken and their skin gets kind of chalky because it's dehydrated, you know. Remember Canelo, like his lips bleeding because he was smiling and his lips were like cracking. Ellerby laughing at him because they made him cut 2 pounds. And which is, you know, nobody mentions this, and history always kind of reveals the truth. I don't know if Canelo's going to be at 54 at any point. You know, they were talking letting out the pants, you know, a little bit in terms of weight ever since that fight. And it kind of makes me wonder, you know, about that. Was he going to be a middleweight, and that's why they went down to 152? They had that information? Because he's not a junior middleweight anymore. But I digress. You know, I'm just curious to see what Broner's body is going to look like. Is he going to dry out? But still, I think he knows how to blow back up. He's going to be the stronger guy. Molina's not a big puncher anyways.
technique, no technique, so whatever he hits Broner with, it ain't going to matter. So I got Broner by decision, but I think it's an interesting fight. I mean, the X factor that my daughter bought was power, the ability to take Broner's. So once those two questions were answered, it was going to be a long night for Adrian Broner. I right off the bat, we can say that Molina's not going to be able to hurt Broner unless there's something seriously wrong with it.
Yeah, I'm still struggling with it. You know, I was leaning with Molina, but all the variables that are being laid out on the table is making me question. Let's pass in some Fight Fans really quick. Fight Fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598, The Moment Roundtable here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Let's go with our first caller. Area code 860, you're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? You out there, brother?
Oh, yo. Had you on mute. I pulled a Gabriel Montoya right there. I had a beefy statement ready, you know, and I opened up, and it was like, are you there? And I was like, oh, wait, I'm on mute. Okay. Well, now I can't say it.
Go ahead, brother. What's on your mind?
Just reset.
All right, man. I'm just going to run through the card real quick, make quick points about everything. Molina hasn't fought in 2 years, and being that Broner is the second coming of, you know, Floyd fighters, what I call them, is like dudes that are inspired by Floyd's, you know, his lead way through his career and how he takes fights, there's a reason he picked the dude coming off of a loss from 2 years ago, you know, and this guy doesn't have any power. Khan was rocking him every now and then, and he cut him early in the first round, so, you know, that's going to be probably a late TKO for Broner. Unless Broner is completely shell-shocked and, like, he's completely arrogant in the sense that he's, you know, right on the card with Floyd Mayweather and he's there with his fans or whatever. But that's besides the point. Amir Khan versus Collazo, till this very day, Amir Khan is still wobbling from those Maidana shots, okay? So Collazo is going to win that strictly because if a lesser Puerto Rican fighter, oh, I'm about to go Donald Sterling on here, a lesser Puerto Rican fighter and Danny Garcia knocked out Amir Khan, Collazo's going to knock out Amir Khan. I just went there and Danny Garcia can still hold that because I'm going on him every show. Maidana is getting hype off of beating a lighter junior welterweight. And this is typical Floyd fight hype. You know, I had to bring myself back because I just realized this just now. I was on Team Maidana until I just realized this. This just hit me. You know what I'm saying? Like a beating you get when your mom gets that phone call from school and you go home thinking it's safe. You know, Maidana is getting hype off of beating a 140-pounder who's not even that good. Like, I'm sorry, Broner's not that good. I wouldn't say he can beat the top 40 140-pounders in the world. I wouldn't even say he could beat Garcia. You know what I'm saying? Garcia's a bomb. You know what I'm saying? So I just see this fight like it's almost like every Floyd fight. There's some hype behind it, but there's always a catch. Yes, Maidana beat Broner, who kind of fights like Floyd, but he's also lost to Devin Alexander. He's gotten knocked down by Maidana. He's gotten knocked down by Amir Khan. He's gotten knocked down by Ortiz. You know what I'm saying? He's very prone to being hurt. He was even hurt by Adrian Broner, and I think it was in the ninth round. He got hit with a right hand and kind of backed off. Yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, to me, Mayweather's going to catch him. You know, I think Mayweather's going to catch him now. Has Mayweather had questionable decisions against lesser fighter than Maidana? Yeah, he had that questionable hand-me decision against Castillo. You know, that Cotto fight I thought was close. You know, I kind of almost wanted to give Cotto the win until I settled down and, you know, I realized the truth. And there's been other fights that he's been losing. Like, you know, I didn't feel like he looked that great in the Ortiz fight. I actually had Ortiz ahead in the fight until he, you know, went Street Fighter on him and headbutted him. So can Maidana do it? You know, yeah, because size is not really an obstacle going into a Floyd fight because Floyd isn't that big. And do I believe in Robert Garcia to be a trainer where he can kind of get Maidana's techniques close to what Cotto had? Yeah, I do believe that. There's a lot of intangibles that go into this fight. You know, like I posted on Twitter, a knockdown for anybody can change the fight because nobody seems to recover well when Maidana hits you. He has that special power that when he hits you and he hurts you, you don't really recover from it for some reason.
Here's the only thing I disagree with you about right now is Garcia. Can Garcia get him closer to, you know, doing something to beat Floyd. I don't think so. I think Garcia, Garcia's training camp is spar, let you throw as many punches, try to land those big punches, and be in there to absorb as much punishment, because the longer you can absorb it, the more greater chance you have of landing your big punch to turn things around. That seems to be the Garcia way. I haven't seen any real adjustment of any fighter going with Garcia where you see the perks of it going like, dude, this guy made a big difference. I haven't seen that. I mean, I see some subtle changes, but not major changes. And for me, Marcos Chino Madonna's got to have not just subtle changes, because subtleness is not going to be enough to beat one of the smartest fighters out there and one of the more gifted fighters out there. There's got to be a major, major change. There's got to be a major change with discipline, a major change in how they're training in their camp, in terms of conditioning and in terms of how to set punches up. Because going in with the old game plan, which all the Garcia guys have proven to do, you know, Brandon Rios to now Madonna, is go in there and swing for the fences and hope that your toughness outlasts the guy that's in front of you. It just, to me, that just doesn't work.
Yeah, that's exactly how I was looking at it. But you know, after what, you know, All Access got me. I'm not gonna lie, All Access got me. I tried not to watch it. I tried, and then I'm watching.
Haven't seen an episode.
Yeah. All Access got me. I'm telling you, they got boxing caught me from all angles this weekend. Okay, you know, but looking at Robert Garcia, you know, the thing is that I see people trying to out technique Floyd and have that boxer bruiser or boxer brawler with technique style. And to be honest, I mean, listen, if Castillo could do it to Floyd and Cotto could do it to Floyd, I don't see why Maidana can't do it to Floyd. But here's the thing, he gets hurt. Like, that's the thing. Maidana gets hurt too much.
Yes, he does.
For somebody who hits that hard and has that style, he gets hurt a little bit too much. He's kind of a little like Gotti, but he doesn't, you know, he is like Gotti. You know,
you know what's funny that you mentioned that here, Rob? Let me tell you something, okay? I was talking to Brian Fogg just yesterday. And I threw something out there. I said, dude, you imagine if Arturo Gatti was still around at 140, 135 to 140, even 147. A lot of these guys that we're mentioning, from, you know, Chino Madonna to Lucas Matisse, all these guys, would they have really been around to get to the where they're at this moment if Arturo Gatti was there? I think Arturo Gatti has one punch crushing power that would have exposed these guys a lot quicker than where they're at right now. I don't know. That was my thought. What do you think, Gabriel? He's on mute.
Gabriel's on mute. Uh-oh.
You see how fast he figures
I'm
that
totally
out.
I'm totally on mute. Totally on mute. sorry, I was typing in the email. I didn't want it to cover on the radio. Breaking stuff. I think I agree with you. I mean, although, you know, Arturo was also a product of good matchmaking, too. You know, his face fell apart, you know, at times, and he wanted to keep him away from dudes that had steady jabs that were bigger. But, I mean, he had legit one-punch knockout power. Does Maidana? He does have that power that, like you said, when he touches you and he hurts you, either you're going to be hurt by him or you're not. And when you're hurt by him, you're really hurt by him. But I don't know. I just don't see a lot of enough wrinkles by Garcia. I've seen some. He uses the jab more. He's a little more fluid now. Kind of moves his shoulders back and forth. It kind of changes. But I just don't. Maybe Rios Pacquiao is just too fresh in my mind. And I don't know. Maybe Maidana is a better fighter than Rios. But I didn't see a lot of adjustments against a speedy boxer that was picking this guy apart. They kind of did the same slow dance for like 12 rounds, got the hell kicked out of him. I'm not sure this is going to be much different.
I just want to say, too,
that Floyd's not aggressive like that.
I just want to say, too, I think a big factor in this fight, and I said it for almost every Floyd fight, the referee. What discourages guys in Floyd's fight the most is that they get hit by elbows in the face constantly. They're getting forearmed, they're getting elbowed, they're getting like the palm of the glove pushed in their face. And that's discouraging because for some reason, if you notice, when you start hitting Floyd on the belt, you start hitting him in the kidney, a punch goes behind the head, you get instantly warned. And that's discouraging because then the fighter's like, well, you know, I can't, you know, I'm going to get cut from these elbows, I'm going to get tired out, you know, my neck's going to get sore from having my face pushed back. You know, like, it's, and they're feeling all these extra stress points in the match that they don't normally feel. And Maidana's a pretty dirty fighter, so I can see some points being deducted, kind of like how he was deducted for in the Mirakan fight. And I don't see, especially Tony Weeks, okay, I don't see Tony Weeks warning Floyd at all. So
yeah,
I
worry about it.
See, yeah, like, that's a strong point for me.
And those are really gray areas, but it's very true. I mean, you can't take fouls back. It's not like calling a touchdown back. Once you get a forearm to the neck or the throat or the face, I mean, there's really no taking that back. That's damage you've accrued. Floyd knows that. Floyd realizes that everything has value, but he also makes you pay a price, not just in the punch you may take, but like you said, like you're walking into a buzzsaw of forearms and elbows when you go inside on Floyd. Him coming across, like that shoulder roll easily becomes, you know, the opposite arm that's not, you know, the shoulder, that, you know, the right shoulder comes across with that left elbow or puts the right in your face. And yeah, Tony's not like that by-the-numbers guy. Kenny Bayless would be the guy I would always put in there. I really like him, and I like Zachary.
Which one is Kenny Bayless? Is that the tall white dude?
No. Kenny Bayless kind of looks like Earthworm Jim a little bit.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the guy that looked like that one dude that was running for president. Not Mitt Romney.
You're talking about Draklish.
Jay Nady.
Yeah. Jay Nady's a good ref.
Oh, you're talking about John Kerry, Draklish. Yeah, he does look like John Kerry.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's other things I've seen, too, in fights. Like, I cannot, you know, I just don't understand why fighters don't do this. But ever since I saw the shoulder roll, I was like, if you're going to work in the clinch, why don't you just put the inside of your glove, your right hand, which would be, you know, if you're right-handed, you're not your lead hand. But you would get in the clinch, and you don't want Floyd to shoulder roll, obviously, right? His left elbow is down by his waist. If you put your glove behind his left elbow, just position it there, he's not going to be able to move a certain way anymore. And I don't see fighters do that. They're always putting it on his shoulder. They're always, like, lightly putting it around him, and they try to work in the clinch, and then they're working with their left hand. It's the sloppiest thing.
Or just trap it with your, you know, like, you not even go behind it, but go right at it. Pin the elbow right above the elbow. That's kind of a softer area. You pin that right to his hip.
Yeah.
Then
I mean,
you slam whatever
into
the chest. Yeah. I mean, Justin Fortson and I would spar, and every once in a while I would try to – we would do, like, body punching, and I would use the shoulder roll, that lead hand down, you know, kind of that shield across the belly. But he quickly showed me how to position it because he would slam my own elbow into my own hip. So you got to – you just really attack it. I've never understood why people don't attack that arm.
Yeah.
It's not that Floyd fits there
in
that shoulder roll all the time, but Cotto did it. He attacked the guard. I think that's a very smart move.
I tell you what Cotto did that was genius, and I used to ask this a long time ago why fighters weren't trying to do this to Floyd Mayweather. Cotto would jump. He would actually step outside of that shoulder roll where it made Floyd turn to look to see where he was going, and then he would throw the left hook, you know, and it caught him every single time. That's something I think the Madonna is going to have to look at, but – you know, that has to consist with footwork, and he just doesn't have it, man. He doesn't have that kind of footwork that Cotto does. There's a lot of things that Cotto does that a lot of fighters should look into. I mean, you know, he's not the Cotto of before, but he's still got a lot left in him.
He plays with range very well because he's a short, stocky guy. He understands how to mask some of the things he's doing, like, you know, kind of sliding up that back foot to make you think, you know, that he's not able to spring towards you. Like, he kind of hides his distance, and then he'll spring forward. Like, Mosley talked to me about it, that he was like, it was very strange. He said he always made me believe that his jab was a little bit further away than it actually was. And some of that is also Cotto turning his shoulders. He turns that back shoulder, and so he gets about 2 or 3 inches out of his jab as opposed to just stepping with the jab. Like, he's stepping and turning his shoulder. So, you know, whatever his reach is, I think it's like 69-inch reach, becomes like a 73-inch reach. Cotto's a tricky,
right,
you know, tricky dude, trying to keep it family-oriented. I almost dropped a bomb.
I was going to say that right now. Hey, Rob, I'm going to put you back on hold,
myself
brother.
Out of the context, though. What's that?
I'm going to put Rob back on hold.
All right, man. Thanks for having me on. Good show. I'll keep listening.
All right,
great stuff, man. Thank you. Have a good one.
Yeah, because we gotta bring in our picks, and we gotta talk about last week's fight really quick here on the.
We gotta savor the moment, as it were.
And then we're gonna have Ken and Sean Porter here on with us on Leave the Ring, give their predictions of the moment. Mayweather versus Madonna. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. Don't forget to download the app and to catch up with the next round on Monday nights. And on Tuesday, you got Boxeo Tijuana Radio. It's all a Spanish network for the Hispanics that are causing panic out there for the boxing world. Hey, real quick, Diaz is, I don't know. We don't know what's really going on in the body of a fighter when they say there was a rib injury. So you got to kind of take, you know, take their word that they're saying the truth. But I think I'm like with the rest of the other guys, fight fans out there and even media, where I'm saying, like, I'm not really sure if that's really, there's really truth to that. Is it because, you know what, he had a much better, skillful, stronger puncher in front of him that I think it was time to say, you know what, enough's enough. I've gotten this far already. I think it's time to hang up the gloves. But saying that now, man, and seeing that fight, I think it's time for the commissions to really do their job and step up and say, enough's enough. You can't do this anymore. You know, you just can't do this anymore. He's lucky that he got out of there alive with Keith Thurman. You know, I thought that Diaz was going to be a little bit more tougher, but, you know, Keith just keeps showing that he's just that much better of a fighter. It doesn't say much fighting a Diaz, but it definitely shows you that he's a true welterweight. He's a guy that's just going to progress every time in and out of the ring. I can't wait to see him to get in with some stiffer competition, see where he goes from there, how he adjusts. This was basically a keep-me-busy type of fight for him, and rightfully so. He's been matched up pretty tough. He's been matched up with some guys that didn't even heard of when he got in with Diego Chavez. Nobody even heard about Diego Chavez, and Diego Chavez gave him a good run for his money. What's in store for Keith Thurman? I don't know. I would really like to see him get in with somebody else that's a little bit more lively, somebody that could really take him to the next test, to the next level. I think it's too soon for Porter versus Thurman talk. To me, it's just way too soon. I think that that would end up like another Alexander and Bradley that fight fans are clamoring and see it, but then when it happens, it doesn't turn out exactly the way we want it to be. Both of these guys still got some time to polish up and really see the greatness come out of both of them, where we can really see a super fight. Not like the moment. You know, the moment is not, this is not a super fight. I loved your article. I had a chance to read that, Gabriel. And, you know, you're on point on a lot of things. And I know a lot of people out there don't want to give you the credit or give, like, Steve Kim or even myself on Leaving the Ring the credit of some of the stuff that we talk about and some of the stuff that some folks would say that, you know, you guys say the truth. You guys don't hold back. It's really, there is no truth about it. If it's right there in front of you, only common sense is going to come out of what you're going to say about the issue or the subject. And that's all we do. It's not about being ballsy. It's pretty much like what, you know, Kathy Duva, you know, she's not doing anything special. She's doing something that is the obvious. And the obvious is something that a lot of people don't want to point at. A lot of people don't want to hear about the truth. A lot of people don't want to talk about it. What they want to talk about are fantasy fights, or they want to diss fighters, but at the same time, they don't want to diss what is happening behind the closed doors of what is going on in this business of boxing. And we do it. So there it is, and that's what it is and stuff. And going back to that article that you wrote, it was great what you had said. This was a prepackaged. We're being sold garbage. It's been happening time and time again. The word super fight no longer exists. The reason to buy a pay-per-view is, God, it's, I don't even know why. I don't even know why we buy it. It's just almost like, why do you go to a video store? They don't exist anymore because you have Redbox, you know? It's someone's same thing. When I see a Blockbuster around, I go, damn, they're still around. You know, it's the same thing with these pay-per-views. Why do they even exist anymore? You know, when these fights really should be on Showtime and HBO, they shouldn't be on a higher platform, because they're not really higher platform fights. These are fights that are very predictable fights. And we're dishing out, I don't know how much it costs over there, but over here it's costing me, if I pay for the fight, I'm paying, like, I think it's like 74 something just to watch a fight that I already know the outcome. And three fights on there should be either on Fox Sports or Showtime Championship. That's it.
I think the thing, you know, the, yeah, the, that's always dangerous is
when you're trying to put things in perspective, you know, in looking at the big picture. Well, one, you should look at the big picture, but two, you shouldn't be nostalgic for the way things were. You know, you should see them as always as they are. And, you know, you look back at those pay-per-views and the kind of good fights that we saw over and over and over again. Fans, maybe we didn't talk to each other as much, but I didn't know many disgruntled boxing fans. Maybe there were some people that were mad that, you know, Leonard and Hagler didn't fight sooner. You know, during the heavyweight period, it was a little frustrating that we didn't quite get all the fights when we wanted them. We eventually, we got most of them. You know, but looking at this and what I wrote, you know, it's just, I don't know, I kind of sat down and there are people that no matter what I say about Floyd, even if I admit that he's a very good fighter, like all the things we're saying, like we're not mad about him using elbows. It's part of his style and it makes it very hard to deal with, you know, and it's on you to really deal with it because you're dealing with him in so many other ways, dealing with him as a star, you know, you're dealing with him as a fighter. And so it's, you know, but the bottom line is, yeah, I mean, you're being sold something that isn't quite what they're saying it is. And I don't care how many times Richard Schaefer says that this is a super fight or, you know, there are lots of negative people out there, but you shouldn't listen to them. This is really good. You know,
how the hell does he know what's really good? He's not even a I was about to outside the box there, but that pisses me off.
Like, you know, if you and I were in a bar and I had to convince you, I said this on the next round, like, it wouldn't take me very long to convince you what is attractive in a bar and what isn't. You know, either the girl's fine and you want to talk to her, or you look at your beer and go, how many more do I have to have? You know, and should I wait a little longer until something better comes along? Entertaining is entertaining.
Quality is
quality, you know. What's that?
This is my analogy of it. How in the F are you going to tell me, Schaefer, this is a good fight, this is a super fight, when you just became a fight fan, not because you love the sport, because you wanted to get into the business of the sport. Don't try to sell me something that I've been watching since I've been a little boy. I can't even remember the first fight that I've witnessed, but you know what I mean? You can't sell something to me that I know for a fact. That's not a good fight. I'm sorry. It's a good fight in terms of being on Showtime or HBO, but to tell me I got to dish out $74-something to see a fight, and not just one fight, I got to see three freaking fights that really shouldn't even be on a pay-per-view platform, and you're going to tell me this is a super fight and I'm just being negative? You're an idiot. That's like me going in there trying to tell you how to you know, what money you should put in stocks. You're going to know that more than me because you've been doing it a much longer time. Don't tell me this is a great fight when it's really not. It's stupid.
It's insulting, you know, and I think it's sort of like, you know, you look at movies today, and I remember as a kid, like, we would drive, my dad's a big movie fan, and so I became a big movie fan, and we would drive past the theater not really knowing what's playing, you know, because it was back in the, you know, in the 70s, so you can't, like, you know, just look it up on your phone. And so we, you know, or call the theater even. So we would drive down and you would kind of just look at the slate and you had all these choices that were actually very good and we'd try, let's go in there. With this, it's like you look at the menu, you pull up, and it's all not really that good, but people buy it anyways. And it's one of the reasons I actually stopped going to the movies, because movies have by and large become kind of crap. The quality and what people think is good has gone down. I don't know why. But I think also it's, you know, people buy it, so people make more of the same crap. And as long as people will buy crap, it'll be made. And that's how I look at these fights. You know, this is the ultimate chance for, like, you know, voting to me is bullshit. Like, it doesn't really exist. These guys gerrymander districts and they rig it so many different ways that it just doesn't feel real. But pay-per-views are real. I mean, they'll sell their bar or their movie theater deal, but the bulk of it is going to come from the consumer. And if you don't like what they're selling, don't buy it. And it just kicks them right in the nuts, right in their wallet, and lets them know that don't sell me this. But if you buy it, but still go, well, but I bought it, so I have a right to complain, shut up, because you're just part of the problem.
Here's the thing about that analogy about the movies. I agree with you all the way, because you go to the movies nowadays, they don't have a very good storyline. What it is all the sound effects. And guess what? I can go watch it on IMAX. So it makes a huge difference. I can feel like I'm really in the movie. Now, this is the same thing with pay-per-view. You talk to some fight fans, you know what they say? They go like, well, I'm going to go because it's in Vegas. I'm going to be able to hang out with people that I normally don't see, other fight fans, and I'm going to be able to see movie stars. So you're paying a big ticket. You're spending over easily $700 going to Las Vegas to go sit down and fight. You already know what's going to happen so that you can hang out or have a chance to have a glimpse of a movie star that is possibly could be there because the stars do come out for a Floyd Mayweather fight. Really, man? I mean, that to me, look, trust me, I'd love to go hang out with buddies and have a couple of beers, but if it's going to cost me 700 bones, dude, that's not even worth it. You know, I can have a better time sitting at home buying a 12-pack and having a nice, good, big, fat cigar. That's just idiotic. And that just kind of shows you the mind frame. And this is why this continues to happen in boxing. Because we're stupid like that. We'll justify stupid moves that these business guys are making so that we can make, you know, we can feel guilt-free that we're enabling these guys to pull the cover over our, the sheet over our eyes. It's just ridiculous. Anyways, we're going to have Sean Porter and Ken Porter on with us on Leaving the Ring. That's enough of our rant here on Leaving the Ring. But I hope a lot of you fight fans feel the same way we do, man, or else we're just going to be two lonely guys in the dark sitting down in the fetal position. I don't think so, though. I think a lot of people do feel the same way we do. You know, this prepackaged stuff is just garbage.
But there's a lot of stuff. I mean, legal stuff this week because, you know, the CSAC, you know, Dan Goodson's now 3-0 against Andre Ward in terms of decisions. You know, there's no knockout to come, and Andre still feels he can get that knockout. And his people put out, a very lengthy press release led by he's got attorney Josh Dubin and his advisor James Prince. They basically said, you know, this is just kind of the beginning of a fight, you know, and that this is, I'm looking through it, trying to find a good quote. It's interesting. I mean, this is an interesting part of it. We also want to be very clear about something else, says the press release from Ward's people. When Andre filed his lawsuit against Dan Goodson late last year, he offered to continue to work with Dan while the case played out. Dan said that he would continue to pursue cards for Andre, but since the Rodriguez bout, he's been unable to deliver. Andre is still waiting for an offer to fight, and the reality is that he is sitting on the shelf because Dan Goodson simply cannot make it happen. This is one of the precise reasons Andre is trying to free himself from this situation. He's stuck with a promoter who we do not feel can advance his career in the appropriate manner. Now, if you're suing somebody, well, here's the thing. When he's in litigation with his promoter, HBO has come out and said, like, at least they've given word in certain circles that they're not going to pursue a fight with Andre Ward while he's in litigation. So, like, by creating this situation and perpetuating it and then kind of blaming this promoter for not being able to do anything about it, like, I don't know. It's a tangled web.
Just to throw this out, know a lot. No, I'm on. I was listening to what you're saying. You know, a lot of people are kind of confused about this Ali Act, you know, of how it really works. And I know that fighters out there are trying to use it to their advantage if they feel that have been taken advantage by the promoter and stuff. But here's the thing, too, that people don't realize. It's when you do go file for an Ali Act, a lot of time it is going to be filed, but it's not filed in the civil court. I don't think a lot of people are aware of that. What happens is when you file, it has to go to the attorney general, and that's the criminal courts. And then they kind of thumb through it, through the case to see whether or not that it's going to be pursued. And more than likely, it's never really pursued because they have to find that there's some criminal act happening in your case with the Ali Act. So what they normally do is they kind of just, they'll file it and then it just sits there. And that's what kind of discourages a lot of fighters. And a lot of fighters that are trying to take advantage of the Ali Act into, you know, for their benefit, they end up not understanding the law of the Ali Act. Granted that the Ali Act it's like Swiss cheese. There's a lot of holes to it because the guy that wrote it really was just more of a bunch of notations written down, and then somebody didn't even revise it. They just kind of skimmed through it and said, oh, okay, let's make this a bill. And that's what happened. The Ali Act really needs to be thoroughly looked over, fine-combed, and those loops need to be walled up so nobody could take advantage of it, not when it comes to promoters, attorneys, matchmakers, the fighters themselves, because this law was supposed to protect, the fighter, and that this is what happens. And unfortunately, we're gonna have Ken Porter and Sean Porter as soon as Gabriel Montoya calls them in right now. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. I'm gonna be talking a little bit more about the Ali Act a little soon. I'm still working on the Boxing Blitz show. I'm almost done with the first segment about the football thing. Some really great stuff, man, that we kind of touched on and the research. I had Gable give me a hand. I had Brian Fogg give me a hand. Steve Kim. Had a lot of people come through for me on this whole segment, not just with that, but with the matchmaking, the Ali Act, a couple other subjects out there that we're touching on, one with about a fighter that's locked up in prison for life right now that I've been working on for, I think, what, maybe 6 months, 7 months, Gabriel? I'm not really sure. You know?
Yeah.
You know, so
something like that.
A lot
I'm waiting. I'm communicating with them right now, trying to see if they're ready or not.
So a lot of stuff that, you know, that we have in the works for Leaving the Ring, so that you know, you guys can have something at the water cooler. Since everybody wants to only talk about baseball, NFL, and basketball, at least you can have something to come up to and say, "Hey, do you guys know this about your sport?" If you guys missed last week's show, when we had Brian Toohey on with us, man, it was some really great stuff. Ann Wolfe was with us as well. She's always a great interview. You know, really good feedback that we had from a lot of fight fans and our loyal listeners that tune in to Leaving the Ring every Thursday. And, you know, at first I was skeptical. I was like, I'm not sure if I should put Brian on because it was really off the topic of solely about boxing, because normally that's all we ever talk about here on Leaving the Ring. It's real rare that we kind of, you know, get off track of that. But had him on, and a real eye-opener about what other sports do. And it's really minor league of what boxing does. But it's good to hear that there are still some people with the white hat, like Kathy Duva, that are willing to, you know, put themselves in the line and try to clean up this sport and try to, you know, to get this better regulated and not let this be like the old West, where it's a free-for-all and anybody that has, you know, the bigger power, I guess you could say, have a monopoly the way Dana White has had over the UFC. And it's really not even Dana White. It's the two guys that own practically Las Vegas out there. They're the real corporates of running the UFC. You know, they're just using Dana White as the face, you know. And it's the same way what Al Heyman was trying to do with Sam Watson, but it just didn't work out. We all know Sam Watson is not the guy that runs what's going on. It's Al Heyman. We're just smart enough to point it out.
Yeah, I just, you know, it's interesting to me watching all the all those folks that kind of would trash me and Steve for writing about Heyman or trash Steve, like, oh, he's always saying Heyman has this influence, and I don't really see any evidence of that. It's like, you're the dumbest reporter of all time, and I imagine he doesn't listen to this show, but he knows who he is. It's very funny watching his silence, or him trying to even just join the conversation a little bit. It's like, oh, you're going to ignore that. Oh, okay, cool. You're going to ignore your history of being a dumb shit. So like Kevin Ioli, you know, moral coward that he is, trashing me on Twitter about PEDs, calling it a dead horse, and then backtracking on that comment, and then kind of quote-unquote apologizing to me via phone, like minutes before I'd be at the arena that he was covering, you know, we were both covering, the Martinez-Chavez fight. People like that make me, they used to make me sick, now they just make me laugh. Watching Ioli this week acting like another wing of PR for these people. You know, they all kind of, guys like him, guys like Raphael, to me, they help create the environment in which all of this has gone down. They've had a bigger platform for a lot longer. They had access to the big players, and they do nothing. They do nothing to help this sport. Literally nothing. Anybody could, you know, you'd go on the ESPN website and find out when the fights are eventually. Press releases will come out. We don't need Dan Raphael for that. What we do need him for is to use his platform to actually shine intelligent light, educated light, on the subjects that matter. Ioli as well. Intelligent, educated. Not your opinions that you can be lauded as the guy with half-assed information, but like the real deal. Really do the work and be willing to take the criticism and see the landscape for what it is and call it what it is. That's our job.
Well,
you know,
yeah, but
they get paid better than anybody
else
to do it.
Job,
and they
they do it worse than anybody else. That's the thing. Well, it used to be a good thing to be a newspaper man in this country, and to be like a newsman.
Right.
Yeah, now it's just a bunch of bitches. And the age of the internet allowed people to be that, I think. And guys like Raphael and Iole are complicit in all of this stuff. I wish, in some senses, cowards like that and the cowards that the boxing promoters that worked with these guys and kind of enabled this system. You know, maybe they should have been named. I don't know. Maybe that's too harsh. Maybe they all have a chance to buy it all back by reporting well on it and also spilling everything they know about all this. Because the mess we're in, you know, this could be good by breaking all this down and then moving forward. This could all be good for boxing. It's cleansing that it needs. I don't mean like holy war. But it's
maybe
just,
maybe I have a chance of buying the Clippers too.
Well, we'll see.
Right? You know,
Do you want to call them in? Because you set it up with them, and I'm not getting anything.
Okay, I'll call
them
in.
That's why I'm sending you that.
My fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring Radio. We went on our little short rant. Omar Henry. Sorry about that. Omar Figueroa. He struggled. Here's the thing is that, you know, it was reported back that he had a hand injury, that, you know, that's what kind of kept him out of the ring. Belmonte is a guy that has beaten Figueroa, three times in the amateurs. I'm honestly finding out a little bit more that I can't report because the people that are giving me the info, they're with him, and they don't want me to release what's happening. I'm trying to convince them to kind of let people know what is really going on with the kid. But just to say this, a lot of the stuff that is being thrown out there, don't believe everything you hear, and I think a lot of us know that. You can't always entirely believe what you hear. You have to kind of judge with your eyes. And I'm going to tell you, I'm judging with my eyes. That didn't seem like there was anything wrong with his hands. It seems to be conditioning. That seems to be the big problem. It also seems that, you know, when he does get in there with somebody that has some skill set, he's got problems. You know, he has problems with. That's something that Diaz is going to have to really work with this kid, is to kind of settle him down, get him to use his jab, teach him to really learn how to place his punches where they're needed to be thrown. He kind of swings in hopes of he gets a big land and it turns the fight around. That fight was a lot closer than the way that the judging was done. I don't know what your thoughts about that fight, Gabriel.
Well, I think, you know, we had talked about the Figueroa fight. I'm sorry, I'm kind of listening to you and doing all this texting. Ken, I just kind of heard back from them, so I'm still trying to get them on.
Okay, cool. All right, I don't have to worry about that.
What's that? Well, yeah, I prefer you did. I'm in trouble. He wants to know what time he was supposed to be on, and I
tell him right now.
Yeah, that's what I did. That's why I'm like, I'm getting frustrated because I'm trying to talk, and this is terrible radio right now.
That's what happens when we're live, you know what I mean?
It drives me crazy when people, yeah, I'm just like,
This reminds me why you like doing roundtables. So. You know, remember we used to do so many roundtables before, and it was always like this, you know, but we had help. We had like Red, we had David Chen with us, and they were basically making all the calls so it didn't interrupt our flow. But now it boils down to just me and you. Speaking of that, hey, if anybody else wants to come out, you know, help out Leaving the Ring when we're doing a live show, give me an email, you know, send me an email or hit me up on Twitter or Facebook. We'd definitely like to bring in some more folks to help us out because sometimes, you know, it's a little hectic where we can't juggle everything that's going on. You know, we have literally people from the business texting us. We get, you know, mail. We get Facebook people hitting us up, people on Twitter hitting us up on direct message. Just a lot of stuff that goes on. Really, on the short 2 hours that we're on live, we get barraged by a lot of folks. So some help would really, really help out a lot if we can get somebody to come over and say, hey, you know what, I'd like to be part of the Leaving the Ring team.
Wait, was David Chen killed, or what happened to him?
David Chen is becoming a police officer. He's just so busy with school, you know. Yeah, he's becoming a cop, man, and good for him, you know. He was with me for quite a long time, back all the way from the YouTube days. And, you know, it just became it conflicted with his schedule. It was a real tough thing for him to do But I told him, hey, bro, you gotta do what's best for you. You know, this gig here doesn't pay us. We don't really get anything. The only satisfaction we really get are our hate mails and, you know, people saying that we work for Snack and we're Conte's cheerleaders and et cetera. Oh, we work for Vada now. It's the only reward that we get, to tell you the truth.
Exactly. That's funny. Well, are we, I think they're, I don't know if they're ready or they may be ready. You may want to check with them. I didn't.
All right, let me call them in. I'll do it.
Yeah.
Give me a minute here. So so while I'm calling them in, you go ahead. Right.
I just think his footwork, everything looks sloppy. The technique and, Ken just texted me. We can call him in 7 minutes. Very specific.
Call him in 7 minutes, you said?
7 minutes.
Okay.
All right. He just looks sloppy, Omar Figueroa. He didn't look very well prepared. He didn't look like a champion to me. He looked like, you know, a guy that I don't know. It's just the energy level. It was just like, I'm going to throw a bunch of punches at the situation. Hopefully that's going to work because I didn't really bring anything else with me. I just felt that it was just kind of an odd performance. You know, I mean, Belmontes faded out and decided I hate when fighters become their own judge. You know, like they decide, like, you know what I'm doing is enough. I'm totally winning this fight. So I'm going to do a little bit less than that, but it's cruise control, but I got this. And he didn't have it. They were tough fights. They were tough rounds. They were tight. He was boxing well, Belmontes, but not well enough to just – you're not going to the Home Depot Center and taking this dude's belt.
He
like
wasn't
that,
over-dominating,
you know?
I can tell you that. Yeah, he was not dominator
no, not
that
at
fight.
All. Not you enough to ease up at all. You're fighting for the title, you know. I mean, if you're running up a mountain that you've never run up before, you know, be prepared to run a little harder than you've ever run. Not ease up at the end. Who wins a race easing up at the end? No one. It just didn't make any sense to me. But at the same time, Figueroa is, I don't know, man. There's a little bloom off that rose.
Yeah, you know what? You know, Figueroa, I mean, here's the sad thing about it is that when we saw the kid for the very first time, you could see it in his eyes. He liked that attention. He really liked to fight. But sometimes what happens with fighters like that is that after they get that major attention from fight fans, they kind of drift into believing that hype. And then they just feel like, you know what, I don't have to do the extra because what I've given so far is enough. What the hell is that?
My computer.
Okay. It's enough that's going to continue to get me to the path that I'm hoping that I'm going to be led to. Now he's saying that this is pros, and in the pros, you have to be always two steps ahead of what you brought in your last fight, because there's always that strong possibility somebody can take your punch, somebody can take away your money punch, somebody can interrupt your rhythm, somebody's going to come in there three times stronger. There's so many variables in boxing. That's why the science of this sport is so difficult to be dominant with. You got to applaud Floyd Mayweather of his skill level, but he's figured the loop of how to stay dominant and stay undefeated, and that's to carefully matchmake himself with the right opponents to be there. So tell you what, let's patch in some fight fans here on Leaving the Ring. You want to call in, you certainly can, 347-215-7598. Don't forget to download the mobile app, rate the mobile app, tell us what you think about it, and you can catch up with the archives of the past shows that have been on the Leaving the Ring network, like The Next Round and Boxeo Tijuana Radio. Let's go with, let me go down this list here really quick. Let's go with area code 210. You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys, great show.
Hey, thank you, brother. So who do you got, man, for this weekend for the moment?
Man, I don't really care. I got Mayweather. But I got a question for y'all. Because I'm battling these slow modes, and I try to put the keyboard down. I spit facts at these guys, but they don't want to hear it. But I just wanted to get y'all's take, because in my opinion, it's like Mayweather. I think he's benefiting from this social media slash reality TV era we're in that's so hot right now. Because I think if it wasn't for that and for the belts and how they are, and there's so many of them, that he wouldn't be as popular as he is now, or he wouldn't be undefeated because he would have to take the fights like back in the old days when they didn't have all this. What do you think?
Well, I think timing is everything, you know. He's been smart enough to take advantage of the new ways of marketing things, no doubt. I mean, he knows how to, you know, I mean, just putting out something on Twitter, you know, when he was fighting Ortiz, how huge that moment was online. You know, he's been ahead of the curve in that sense. Even Ustream, although people have been using it before, you know, for a fighter to go and do a rant and make a huge story and then go apologize, it became a little bit of a reality show there that he was doing, and people tuned in. You know, but at the same time, I think he came along at a perfect storm when a guy named Al Haymon had an idea to take over the sport and to get leverage within the sport that was wide open. You know, it was kind of like the music industry. You could kind of come in and take over. And so that's what happened. You know, Al was at the point where he was ready to take over right when Floyd was thinking, hey, he'd be better off to be, you know, a free agent. I mean, Sugar Ray Robinson was a free agent and was a tough negotiator and all those things, fought for cable rights and would almost walk away. I think it was one where he said, like, I'm not going to fight. And everything was set, like, you know, people were arriving. He wanted a new TV contract deal, you know, something like that. Floyd didn't invent all this, you know, the difficult star, but he certainly perfected it in terms of how much money he's made. But I think he couldn't do it alone. I don't think it's necessarily one factor. I think it's Al wanting that leverage. And, you know, according to certain people, like having a guy like Kerry Davis, who's willing to kind of go along with that, that's how some people tell the story. I don't know how true it is. I've heard versions of it. But all those kind of factors came into play for Floyd right at the right time, you know, and the fact that he had a contract he could buy out, all those things. And then having Oscar De La Hoya right there looking to make his own company and willing to kind of sell his soul a little bit in order to have a big fight that would rival Top Ranks, you know. There's just a lot of factors. I mean, HBO practically creating Golden Boy. People forget that. And that's off of that platform and that structure. That's where Floyd was able to jump from Top Rank. If that doesn't exist, Floyd doesn't really exist. If Golden Boy didn't, that structure and HBO's relationship with them, all of that stuff is what contributed as much as Floyd's antics to where he is now.
You know what? The thing about what Floyd, he's tapped into is the era of what these kids want to be like. I mean, look at the way the rap industry is. All these kids, they think that having expensive cars and big jewelry and all the chicks surrounding you, that's the thing to do. It always reminds me of that movie, The Bronx Tale, when that little boy tells his dad, the working man is the sucker man, you know. Nobody wants to be that working man. Everybody wants that flash life. And Floyd tapped into it, and that's where he's getting all these flash life type of kids that think that having a 100 over a bunch of rolled up ones is what makes you, you know, fancy. It makes you the man, the it factor. He's tapped into it, and you're right. A lot of these guys that come in talking about boxing, and I put this on my Facebook. I said, the moment when all these casual fans make videos pounding their chest saying that they knew that Floyd was going to win. I told you Floyd was going to win. Like, that was a great prediction. You know what I'm saying? I don't argue with those guys, just like I don't argue with the Pacquiao fans. I let them speak their piece, and I let them walk away believing that they're smarter than what they're really not, you know, smart about. They really don't know our sport. I wouldn't give them the time of day, brother, if I was you.
Yeah, I appreciate this call, and disclosing, from when I see him, that's exactly what I see. I see the Kardashian. You know, I've watched a couple of shows because she's hot, but there's no point to the show. She's just running around shopping, and how did she get famous? And it boggles my mind how people are famous nowadays, but I think he kind of benefited off of that. But thanks again, guys. Great show.
I got to tell you this,
every time I tune in
to watch the Kardashians, dude, I never get to see how hot she is because she's always crying. Every segment I've ever tuned in to see her, she's always, always crying. I don't know. Hey, man, thanks for calling in, brother. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
guys. We're going to be calling in Sean Porter right now.
Every time I tune into the Kardashians, oh, wait a minute, I never do that, actually.
I'm in a very vulnerable moment. there, you know? That was a vulnerable moment for me talking about tuning in to listen to, no, to watch
Secret
Action. I would
keep that shit to yourself. You know, I just, there's some things, Dave, you don't talk about.
Some things, exactly, you know? And that's just one of them right there.
Steve Kim is done with his workout. He is available to be talked to, but we also have the porters coming, right?
I'm calling the porters in right now.
All right. We are past the 7-minute threshold, but hopefully he will still be there.
Ken, I'm going to patch you in right now, okay, brother?
Are you calling him on the bat phone?
I am calling him on the bat phone right now. And let me patch in Mr. Ken Porter. Ken, are you there, brother?
Yes, I am.
Hey, thanks for taking the time to talk to me on Leave the Ring, brother. Really appreciate it. And
say that again, please.
I said thanks for taking the time to talk to us here on Leaving the Ring, and congratulations for you and your son with that fight with Paul Malignaggi. He looked phenomenal. He looked strong. He looked great, man. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for the invite on the show. I love the show. And thank you for the compliment on the fight. I give him about a B-.
Really? Tell me why. Why B-?
You know, my expectations are so high. You know, that if he doesn't reach him, I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. I'm gonna tell him. So I was actually yelling at him during the fight. He had me pissed off because he was headhunting.
You know what? I gotta agree with you. He was headhunting, but it was working for him. Tell me, Ken, what would you have liked to have seen from him a little bit more in that fight?
Well, let me give him just a little bit of leeway here. I did tell him that no matter what he did, he was going to catch up to Paulie, and I wanted him to flow with everything that he was doing. So the way I broke it down to him, we were sitting in the back before the fight, the way I broke it down to him, I said, as long as you flow, if you throw a jab and you move your head afterwards, just flow. If you throw a 1-2 and you miss, move your head afterwards and flow. If you don't catch him with quickness, you're going to catch him with speed. If you don't catch him with speed, you'll catch him with power. If you don't catch him with power, you're going to catch him with aggressiveness. If you don't catch him with that, you're going to get him with your conditioning. As long as you flow from one thing to the next, just continue to flow, you're going to catch him. So he knew when he missed a headshot, or even missed two headshots, that no matter what he was doing, he was going to catch up to him.
For you, though, did you want to see longer rounds? You wanted to see more what out of Sean? Just more, like you said, just more flow? I mean, it's chaos, though, right? You can't really plan for it. He gets a
no, he did what he should have did. And, you know, if he had done it the way that – I mean, it still came out to the result that we wanted, but if he had done it more to the plan, it would have been, more body work leading, you know, when we had him on the ropes, there would have been more body work that led to the headshots. Because the headshots that he missed, he knew for the last 6, 7, 8 weeks of working that he was going to miss those headshots. He knew that. Because we had discussed it enough times to know that Paulie had good head movement. He was going to miss those shots. He wasn't supposed to throw them. He was supposed to throw the body shots and come back to the head. But he knew also that I told him no matter what, just flow. And him flowing didn't mean he was supposed to slow down. Him flowing just meant if he threw a shot and he missed, he immediately rolled into the next shot or the next defensive move and then right into the next combination.
What is next on the agenda? What's your guys' agenda? Who's the next opponent you guys are looking for to get at?
Kell Brook. The mandatory Kell Brook.
They know he's the mandatory, so there's no talk of trying to get around the fight. You guys want the fight. I love that fight, personally.
Me too.
What do you think about
it? Me too.
Well, the way I look at it is, if you're telling me we got somebody that we can fight and we don't have to chase them or beg them or ask them to fight us, that makes it a little bit easier for us. That means we can go ahead and get started on the game plan. So, I mean, to this point with Sean, throughout his career, we're talking way back to the very first professional fight. We've always had trouble getting opponents. You know, that's always been a problem. As far as the study that I've done on this guy right now, you know, I think he's tailor-made for us. I'm quite sure he thinks that his advantage of being a bigger fighter in the welterweight class has been his advantage throughout his career. I could send him a memo and say, listen, buddy, we were born and bred to be big guys. Our adjustment is fighting the smaller guys. You're not a problem for us at all. We look forward to it. So it even looks better when you got a big, strong guy and you take him down. So we love being a giant killer.
There you go. Well, we got this big moment happening this Saturday between Floyd Mayweather and Chino Madonna. Ken, tell me, who wins this fight and how do they win it? And what do you think is going to be the major factor during the fight?
I believe that it's a good matchup in terms of, you know, one guy trying to break another guy's style down. But I don't believe that Madonna has the ability to break Mayweather's style down. I don't think his feet are fast enough. I don't think his hands are quick enough. I don't think he's versatile enough. But he's going to come in, he's going to give a good, hard, strong fight. As far as Mayweather's concerned, he didn't do an 8-week camp for this guy. He did his whole entire career for this guy. He's prepared for this guy. Every time he's prepared for anybody else that he fought with this particular style, meaning mostly, you know, Mexican fighters or Latin fighters,
right,
he's always been prepared to fight them. You know, when we go into a camp, we do fight-specific training for that fighter. If you give us the same guy for the next 6-8 fights, we don't have to change anything. We just tweak it, sharpen it up, and we go in there and we do what we've always done. So he's going to be successful because this isn't something he has to work hard to prepare for. This, he's going to work hard, and he has, but this is what he's used to. This is what he knows. This is his comfort zone. You know, you give him a guy like Sean Porter, and there's no comfort there. There's no comfort zone there. We don't give him no room. We don't give him no chance to breathe. We don't let him blink. As he's walking back to the corner, he might get hit in the back of the head. So, you know, it's just not something that he wants to, you know, entertain.
If you had Chino Madonna, what kind of advice would you give him going into the fight with Floyd? I mean, what adjustments do you think that you would have added to his arsenal to get him a victory?
Well, you know, in some situations like this, when you're just limited, there's only so much the guy can do. You know what I mean? He only has the God-given abilities that he's been given. And then when you look at also a guy being, you know, 30-plus years of age, he's set in his ways. So there's certain things that you would ask a guy to do that he isn't capable of from a physical standpoint, and then other things you're going to ask him to do that are fight-specific that he's not going to be able to do because his mindset doesn't want to take that on. He doesn't want to try something new, you know. But if it was me, I would basically ask him to stick to him like glue, move his head, throw his punches, and continue to work hard, you know, for the whole 12 rounds because going for a knockout against this guy is not going to work. One big punch ain't going to work. Two big punches not going to work. You're just going to have to really, you know, roll up your sleeves and be ready to go the distance and give it everything you got with him.
I agree, man. I agree. Really quick, Luis Collazo and Amir Khan, what's your pick on that one?
I believe Luis Collazo's coming in, and he's coming in, you know, off a great win against a very notable fighter. And he's got that to springboard off of. But I see Khan winning this fight going the distance. I see Khan winning the fight. I do believe Luis is going to have his moments during the fight, but to be able to sustain that is going to be the difference between, you know, a guy being a world champion and a guy who had a cup of coffee as a world champion and is just trying to get back to getting back to the table again to sit down and discuss what he wants to order.
Yeah, I agree. Well, here we go, Ken Porter, the father and trainer of Sean Porter here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Brother, it's always a pleasure having you on with us and talk boxing. We're falling short on time right now, so I got to let you go. I'll talk to you very soon again, brother. Thank you again.
Thank you for having us. Thank you. Bye.
All right, man. Take care.
There you go, Sean Porter. I mean, Ken Porter, the father and trainer of Sean Porter. Man, a lot of noise in the background. I hope, you know, it didn't hurt everybody's ears and stuff, you know. We try
to
get these guys.
I wanted to know where he was taking us. Are we going to lunch? Or where are we going? Are we going to Vegas?
I felt like I was on a speedboat doing an interview, you know?
It was kind of funny.
You know,
Ken's
a good guy.
I
like Ken a lot. You know, we have some good conversations via text and go back and forth. And, you know, we only got about another 10 minutes. I think we can get Steve, squeeze him in really quick. Is that possible, Hugh Gabriel?
Oh, yeah, let me give it a shot.
My fans, you want to call in? Really quick, I don't know if we can patch you in and stuff. I'll try my best here. 347-215-7598. I know some folks say they missed the 3-hour segment that we used to do, but then we used to get a lot of people. You know, it was like a 50-50 thing. A lot of folks loved it, and a lot of folks didn't like it because they said, well, we didn't have a chance to listen to the whole show, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I tell you what, those 3 hours, sometimes we felt like it wasn't even enough. But here we go. Steve Kidd from Max Boxing here on Leaving the Ring. What's up, Steve?
Gentlemen, good morning. Good afternoon to you.
How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing well. I just got out of yoga. I'm nice and stretched out.
All right.
I got to go back. I got to go back, man. I'm all stiff.
If Kathy Duba's complaint has any merit to it, Richard Schaefer and Al Haymon are going to be nice and stretched out. I know you're writing a piece about it. Can you give us a little preview and insight into the complaint, as it were?
Well, you know, we're going to find out if it has any merit. I just want to know exactly how binding is an email as it relates to Kathy Duba and Yvonne Michelle when it came to the Sergey Kovalev-Adonis Stevenson fight that has gone by the wayside. But what I find interesting is that this complaint, and I have a copy of it, and as do you, Gabe, actually has a of the Al Haymon agreement. And a lot of people are telling me that's basically a promotional agreement that'd make it illegal in a lot of ways. I think that process of discovery, if it gets that far, is going to be really interesting. I think this case, if it has any legs to it and has any real ramifications, it won't be about Stevenson Kovalev. I don't think it's going to force that fight to happen. I think the schedule is already set. The die is cast. But I think what it's going to do is shine the light on exactly what is going on as it relates to Al Haymon. I mean, this even referenced the strife going on at Golden Boy between Richard Schaefer and Oscar De La Hoya, where it alleges in one of the pages that it's well known throughout the industry that Richard Schaefer and Al Haymon are trying to wrest control of that company from Oscar De La Hoya. I think it's a fascinating case. And basically my story is not going to shed any more light than what Chris Mannix or Scott Schaefer, who did a really nice job for Boxing Talk, or Kevin Ioli. My story is basically going to be about the perspective, and I got some quotes and some thoughts from Kathy Duba about exactly why they're doing this. So I think it's interesting. I mean, there's a lot of fights going on in boxing, and the best ones are going on outside the ring, whether it relates to Julio Cesar Chavez and Top Rank, Andre Ward and Dan Goosen again. And this case here, I think, could really, I don't know if I want to say it had a seismic change in the business, but it could certainly have a ripple effect because the ever-growing presence of Al Haymon, well, let's face it, it's pervasive and it is affecting the fights that we see.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it's a precedent-setting case. I mean, it really does kind of seem to be, you know, just busting it out finally. I mean, I find it interesting over the years how much you've written about him, I've written about him.
I know Doug's probably mentioned him in his mailbags a few times, and more than a few times, but like early on in the day, like you guys were been covering it the whole time as you've noticed this kind of disparity. And I think that's the biggest thing here is the contract coming out. But then all those people, if it gets to this point, that are going to be deposed, the Ludabellas, Dan Goosen, or Gary Shaw, people that have worked with Al Heyman, do you think you can get to that point? I mean, is the lawsuit big enough that it can cover it and start to kind of bring in this larger picture?
Well, that's one of my points that I'm going to make is that, once again, Kathy Duva, as I've called her before, she's the ballsiest broad in the business. She's got more guts than most of the men. And you're right, the guys that have been cowering or complicit with Al Heyman, what are they going to do here? Because this does directly affect them. And I give Kathy Duva a lot of credit. She can be part of the problem or she can create a solution. She believes that she's a fighter, and she's feisty. There's no doubt about it. I think she's one of the brightest minds in all of boxing. And she had had enough. And I think she's not only fighting for her business, she's also fighting for the dynamic of the boxing business in general. And, you know, there's a strange subset of fans and journalists or writers or bloggers or jock sniffers who get credentials who are rooting for Al Heyman as if they're part of the team, as if they're basically an extension of Sam Watson's kids walking in the fighters and acting as part of the entourage. I've never really quite understood that dynamic. But
right.
As a fight fan, I want to see the best fights. I don't want to see fights broken up. I don't want to see this obstruction. And to basically root for Al Heyman, that's like rooting for Microsoft or something. I don't know what you really get out of it. I want to see what happens here. I want to see the – because, see, in the past, Al Heyman has been a very dark, shadowy figure. I mean, for the last decade, most people have believed that it's Sam Watson who was actually Al Heyman. I mean, that's how much of a right. Machiavellian figure he's been, almost like Kaiser Soze. Well, Al Heyman, for some reason, has skirted a lot of spotlight, and he shunned it. Now, with this lawsuit coming, I don't think this will be the only one, guys. I think this will be the first of several actions against him, because I think people have had enough. Now, how will he deal with him actually being known and then actually scrutinized?
What do you think is what happened out of this outcome here, Steve? Is this something that you think is going to take an overall of years to come up with a solution? Do you think this is something that can happen behind closed doors before reaching court? What do you think the outcome is going to be?
You know, I really don't know. I mean, that could be up to the court. I'm not a lawyer. I read the legal filing yesterday, and I just was more entertained by it than anything, and I'll have to be educated by people that know much more than me. But I think the outcome is hopefully there's a fair and level playing field, and there's not a monopoly created. For all these boxing fans that want a monopoly, first of all, monopolies don't work. I don't think they're good for any business. I mean, look at the phone companies for years with, AT&T or Ma Bell. That didn't help, I don't think, the consumers. You know, what I think is going to happen here is that Al Heyman will hopefully, if this works out, Al Heyman will realize you can't act in the way you do. You have to respect other people's contracts. I think that, to me, if they are buzzing other fighters' ears, and we've all heard of the rumors, interfering in contracts, blowing up fights, that's, to me, I want that to stop. Not good for the business. I think it's our job as the media to kind of point it out. And, you know, this is a long-range story that we have to write, and I think it's fascinating because there's an irony that now HBO is getting hurt by this guy and his actions or his influence and his power, when in large part HBO, under the regime of Ross Greenberg and Kerry Davis, basically enabled this. This is their creation, and this cannot be stated enough, and these guys should not be forgotten because Ken Hirschman deserves a lot of criticism, but some of these problems that are currently plaguing the business of boxing was a direct result of the, I think, incredibly misguided leadership of Greenberg and Davis for over a decade.
And it being underreported, that it was happening right under everybody's nose. I think you took it as far as you could, Hauser did. But, you know, the big question I want to hear in this is why the disparity in purses, how that, the mechanics of how that happened.
And that's a question nobody's really answered. It's all just kind of been left to fester. You're absolutely right.
Right, and, you know, we had guys flat out saying there is no influence of Al-Qaeda. Well, that was incorrect, and that's why nobody reads those guys. They don't know anything. So
exactly.
Now I think people have to at least acknowledge, wow, this Al Haymon, number one, he is influential, he is powerful, and number two, is that a good thing? And we're going to soon find out. I think this is, as Terrell Owens once said, get your popcorn ready.
There you go.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, without question.
Well, Steve, again, brother, thanks for coming on and filling this in about this complaint here by Kathy Duva towards Al Haymon and Showtime. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, guys. Great show. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Steve. Have a great one.
Well, we're at the end of our show here on Leaving the Ring. Everybody, you know, have a safe weekend. Enjoy your weekend. It's my birthday weekend because my birthday is on Monday, which is Cinco de Mayo. I'm actually a Cinco de Mayo baby. So you guys be out there. Be safe. If you're in Las Vegas, make sure you're responsible. Drink responsible. Don't drink and drive because you know what happens. You will spill your beer. I will catch up with you guys next week, Thursday, here on Leaving the Ring. Don't forget, Monday nights, you got the next round with Gabriel Montoya and Steve Kim. And then, Boxeo Tijuana Radio, an all-Spanish network that is presented by the Leaving the Ring Network to you on your mobile app, comes on every Tuesday. And then yours here, truly here, Leaving the Ring Radio, the guys that like to throw an hour rant about why our sport is so screwed up, but then continue to watch the sport. Because I've had a lot of people, you know, come at me and they go like, well, if you hate the sport so much, why do you watch it? I don't know. Why do people watch train wrecks? Why do people watch car crashes? You know, it's there. Anyways, hey, Gabriel, you have a good weekend, brother. Yeah,
you too,
yeah,
man.
That's,
and I will see you at the fights or, you know, in one way or another. Peace.
All right.